Buzz. Welcome to the OMR podcast. In this week's edition, I have the pleasure to announce Mark Repkin from Facebook, one of the key decision makers at Facebook in charge of the whole advertising product. He visited us at the OMR Festival in March, and around his speaking gig, he was interviewed by Thea Töpfer and Michael Trautmann. Those two are two of the leaders in advertising in general. In Germany, Michael founded one of the largest creative agencies. Thea founded one of the largest Facebook and social advertising companies, Facelift. And those two teamed up, their friends, they met with Mark, and I think they created a very good conversation. Enjoy!
Buzz. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. It's so nice.
Excited to talk to you too.
Yeah, it's so nice to have you. We had had your speech today. Nice speech. We were very excited to have you on the big dance floor. And maybe we start with your story. How did you become what you are today? What is your path? Where are you from?
Yeah, so I was born in the USSR in Estonia. So it was still right before the collapse of the Soviet Union, you know, still Cold War time. And I came to the US in 91 after 4 months in Austria.
Interesting.
So I think I retained some German sounds in my brain, but no words. In the Bay Area, just, you know, so much technology around, so many companies. I went to Berkeley, I then got my master's at Stanford, and I started kind of on the more traditional side at Intel, and then moved to Google and then Facebook.
Cool.
And I am a software engineer by training. C++ was my language of choice.
Very cool.
Great.
And, what we learned before is that your role at Facebook over the 10 years really developed from a expert for a special field into a management role. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about your team. What's your responsibility at Facebook?
Yeah, you know, before coming to Facebook, I was kind of a back-end cloud engineer, so really focused on data centers and machines. And when I came to Facebook, I wanted to do engineering, but I wanted to do something that can impact the business a little bit more and move the company. So I was engineer number 3 or 4 on the Facebook ad system in 2007. Cool. And that team grew all the way from that time to, you know, over 2,000 people on our team today. So it's taken 11 years, 10 and a half to get there, but it's been a pretty exciting set of growth.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. Talking about, I mean, you were just mentioning it, the Facebook Ads API. I mean, we are marketing partners since 2011. And
wonderful.
Yeah. And I mean, now the Ads API, I think the version is 2.11, I think. So let's be a little bit technical. So there has been a lot of changes the recent years. And so is there anything, you know, not looking too far, but what are your strategies? I mean, programmatic advertising, I think Facebook has been the leader in this field. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so for the API and ads platform specifically, we made a decision a long time ago to make sure that every feature that you can do on Facebook for ads using our native tools that you can also do through the platform. Because we really wanted to create a community of developers that can help advertisers in every aspect. And we really wanted to make sure that businesses, advertisers can get the best experience, not due to technical limitations, but due to what's the best product that all the FMPs, Facebook marketing partners, or us can create. As far as kind of your question about programmatic, we've been really, really focused, very similarly to the API side, we've been trying to always democratize ads. We always want every small business, every medium business to have all the power tools that used to be only available to the big companies. And I think that's been a really good strategy, and it's been just really exciting to see small business, medium businesses. Sometimes they're catching up because they have less resources, but sometimes they're leading the way on different creative approaches, on different ways to measure, on different ways to find their audiences. We have one of the biggest kind of small and medium business bases in the industry, and I'm really proud of that.
Great. It's cool. We are both, I think I'm since 10 years as a human being on the platform. Same with you.
Yeah.
And I really saw the development as a, from my perspective as a consumer or community member. And now I learn and I hear that, that there is some, to some degree, there is some oversaturation. Some countries, some people, especially media, wants to tell that this maybe is the, not end of Facebook, but the end of this fantastic growth rates. What is your perspective? How does the your core product, Facebook, develop over on a global view? And what's with the other things like Instagram and so on?
Yeah, so I think any growing service, especially services like Facebook, Instagram, Messenger, WhatsApp, that really serve almost a whole country a lot of the time, eventually they're going to reach saturation. There's no way to magically create more people when there's no more people. But Facebook itself is still growing really strongly overall as a product. I think in some of the more developed markets, the growth is slowing down, but it is still growing overall. And then when we look at the whole family, Instagram just hit 800 million people. I think Instagram Stories as an experience is at 300 million. And all the messaging apps are growing really quickly. You know, I think the story that we're facing is much more evolution and transformation in what people are doing on mobile. I think communication, which is what our company is all about, is still going to be at the forefront of what people do on their mobile phones. They consume content and they communicate. But that communication changes really quickly. So I think what you'll see is a lot of growth of kind of the new experiences, but I think you'll also see experiences that bridge some of the apps more. Mm-hmm. I think some of the usage we've seen in Messenger and WhatsApp, where people love group chats so they can pick just the right audience, I think we'll see groups get bigger in Facebook. Mm-hmm. And I think in this way, social media will evolve and people will share in slightly different ways with slightly different audiences. But I think it's a fundamental human need and one of the biggest value that all the Facebook apps bring.
Yeah. What I learned, I had the privilege to sit next to you on a very exclusive Facebook dinner 2 days ago, and
it was wonderful.
Yeah, it was really, really, really wonderful. But what you told me there is that you, as a company, changed your mission statement, vision. You had a vision which was very much connecting everything and being open, and you reworked it a little bit. I think groups is something which comes out of this rework of the mission statement. Maybe you can give us some insight of this.
Yeah, so I mean, fundamentally, the soul of the company is the same. We're connecting people. We're trying to help them communicate. We're trying to bring them together into community. But I do think, especially in the early days of Facebook, we probably were slightly too optimistic in all the ways people would communicate. I think it brought, over the years, a tremendous amount of good, a tremendous amount of connection. But especially more recently, kind of over the last couple years, those same communication channels, humans will figure out a way to use them for both good and bad. And lately, I think people have been, you know, a little more professional at doing the bad stuff. The incentives are so high, you know, whether you're trying to make money on some hoax or fake news, or you're trying to influence something inappropriately. And we're investing a lot to try to make sure we're maximizing all the good stuff, all the connection. We're trying to find that by focusing on community and meaning. what is bringing people together, what is a meaningful experience for them, what is the kind of experience where afterwards they feel, wow, it's good that I had that. That's our target. And then we're trying to eliminate the damaging experience, you know, hate speech, false news, different kind of activity that's just financially motivated to spread untruth. And we're trying to get much better both with AI, with a lot of human review, basically every tool at our disposal to reduce the incentives for the bad stuff.
It's interesting. We, as an agency, we did our first Facebook campaign, I think 7 years ago, and it was about missing children. And we managed to create a page where we had more than 20,000 followers overnight, as we were using a picture of missing children when a soccer team comes onto the field, where they usually have kids on their hand. And we could see really the power the platform has to do good. So we found more than 10 missed children over Facebook. And so my first experience is just the good thing. And over, as you mentioned, over the last years, we saw bad things. And maybe we touch this topic now because you addressed it. What did you learn out of this Cambridge Analytica topic? The topic is very old. You solved it, but it's now in the media. So what did you learn out of this?
I think it's similar to what I was saying before. Our vision for the platform at the time was a very open platform where, just like Windows or Mac OS X, where developers can build applications and there's an infrastructure that helps you build great applications faster that help connect people, share, and so on. But what we saw, you know, after a year and a half into it, is not as many of those amazing applications as we were visualizing and hoping materialized. And so we tightened the platform then. I think the important lesson for us is to just keep really careful watch over how all these connectivity tools are used and to act much more quickly and much more transparently when we detect bad stuff.
You really heavily invest into people who are working on these issues?
A lot.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in Facebook in total, by the end of this year or maybe mid next year, we're going to have 20,000 people total working on preventing bad things on the platform. And that's obviously very different set of people. We have engineers, data analysts, all the people who build the products, but then also human reviewers, security people, everyone working together to try to make this just the cleanest, safest, and most valuable platform for connecting that we can build.
Interesting.
I mean, I remember those times when we first did campaigns for clients and they wanted to get fans. Yeah. And at that time, I think six, seven years ago, there was a cost per fan, yeah, and we generated the fans. And for brands, the value for brands was getting more fans. Yeah. So what is the role of fans now?
Yeah, so I guess your question, if I may, is just in the future, how do you reach people organically? How do you reach people in other ways? You know, I think the ecosystem keeps evolving. I'll give you an example. Facebook Pages just was unbelievable when it first launched because there were so many people and so few pages. So that combination was pretty amazing. After a while, there was a bunch of people and a lot of pages. So obviously the amount each page gets was lower. But I think that stuff is a little bit cyclical and keeps shifting as new experiences arrive. For example, Instagram now is achieving a fantastic balance where people are following a lot of friends, but also a lot of brands, a lot of influencers. There's so many people from music to fashion to products that are born and driven through Instagram. And the vast majority of that is organic. So I don't think this ever goes away. I think also there'll be a big opportunity for platforms over time to reach people through messaging applications. But it'll be a smaller number of people that you reach more deeply, because messaging is turning out, just like for humans, it's a smaller number of people but a deeper connection. But the most loyal customers, I think, of, for instance, small local businesses will be messaging with that business and ordering and maybe asking the owner, how are you, once you get to know them, just like we do in person when we step into a local business we like. So I think it never stays the same, but that desire to connection will always be there. And it will be there because in the end, people want to connect with businesses. It's just the expectation. What is the relevancy level? What is the channel? As a person, how do I control which brands I'm connected to? That'll keep evolving, but the need is always there.
Yeah.
And whenever people need and want something, there will be products that provide that.
Yeah.
Yeah. No comment. I have one question. If you look, we're talking a lot about what is in the US and Germany, but the perspective to Asia is interesting for us as well. What is your perspective on WeChat? I mean, they are a company, because the mother is a company.
They are really a super app.
Business, yeah. Impact. Is WeChat somehow a role model for WhatsApp? Are there things where you say, well, we want to go into this direction, or is it a totally different story?
You know, my mind is still open about WeChat and how it will translate into different markets or not. It hasn't happened anywhere exactly yet, but that doesn't mean it won't happen. I think, you know, a lot of people have written and talked about WeChat. There's a lot of factors that could have led to it happening in China. There's not a lot of credit card or other online payment adoption at the time it got big. The app stores were very fragmented across different Android phones, so there was a lot more value add from a single unified app store that WeChat kind of replaced. And perfect timing, right, as smartphone adoption went from zero to a huge percentage. So I am positive that all the messaging apps in the world will provide a much deeper connection to businesses than they do today. You'll be chatting with businesses, you'll be transacting with them, you'll be getting receipts, you'll be doing a lot of stuff. But at the same time, you know, it's not clear to me that a lot of the other stuff you can do in WeChat from a pure product perspective, if it's the best possible user experience. It's very convenient, but the UI is also limited. So I think we'll see different combinations in different countries. We'll see all the messaging apps moving toward business, but I don't know if any place will turn out exactly the same.
Maybe we talk a little about e-commerce, so having a look at the big player Amazon. So how is your perspective on commerce on Facebook? Instagram, I think you're very successful.
Yeah, we have a lot of efforts to help people discover stuff and shop for things and find things. We have two major kind of commerce things, actually more than that. The Instagram side, there's a lot of pages that are, or Instagram accounts rather, that are already trying to sell, and they have products. And the feedback we get from everyone, both people and those accounts, they want to be able to organize the items better. They want to enable a little more shopping right in Instagram. We're working on kind of shopping and buying right in there, but we will see which aspect of that turns out to be the most popular. And then, of course, we have a marketplace,
yep,
in the Facebook app, which is growing really rapidly. It's one of the biggest person-to-person commerce platforms in the world, and the biggest in many markets. And we're really trying to extend that to be more diverse. We want every Facebook page to be able to show their stuff in marketplace.
It's somehow like eBay in the very early days, from the attitude, is it right? Or
in some ways, I think, in the sense that eBay was a pretty broad marketing platform and it had both people selling and businesses selling, I agree with you. I think Marketplace is an interesting hybrid. It's a little more discovery and browse oriented. It has quite a lot of searching as well, but as usual with Facebook, a lot of times our secret sauce is not just search, but discovery as well. And the other part that's interesting in about Marketplace, it's really designed for an era where the lines in most countries between a person and a business are quite blurry. If you take a lot of countries in Southeast Asia, like let's say Thailand, is a person a person? Is it a business? I can't vouch for this exact number, but I've heard said that there's more small businesses in Thailand than there are people.
So everyone has at least three businesses.
But it's a different feel. They're actually trying to make it work as a business. They're not just, oh, I don't use this item anymore, so I'm going to sell it. So even the P2P aspect has a much more kind of commercial, scalable nature to it. I am really, really excited about that product's growth and development.
Actually, I'm a gamer by heart, and I found the cooperation between Facebook and ESL, Electronic Sports League, very, very interesting. And I'm wondering, I mean, what is coming next? I mean, will I see also my favorite soccer team maybe on Facebook?
Yeah, so there's two aspects of esports or real, not real, physical sports.
Oh, that's very political.
No, I honestly misspoke. I think there's two different aspects that are interesting. One is the traditional aspect of it, which is the content. Sports of all kinds produces just amazing content, real-time, engaging, emotionally exciting. It's great. But the other aspect of sports that I'm really excited about Facebook for is the community aspect. Part of the reason sports are so exciting is because whenever you're a fan of a team, you feel like you're a part of something, you're a part of the community. And that's the part where I think Facebook can really bring a lot of secret sauce to the table. There's obviously, communities and streaming sites and so on for gaming, but we're really hoping we can build a community that's more engaged, more sharing, perhaps in a way safer and kinder than some of the gaming communities. And in general, that's a very exciting approach to us for content, is for sports and beyond, helping people connect around content they love, helping you find other fans of that same content, share it, discuss it. That's how the circle is built of loyalty to the content, which is great for everyone, but also just a lot of meaning and satisfaction. I mean, I'm the type of person where I can't watch anything without, you know, calling my wife and telling her exactly how I felt about it. And it's not the same without that part. And I hope we can bring that same feeling to everyone.
Another topic which is very interesting for me, I'm very much interested in HR, the future of work, and in several countries you launched a job feature where you can place offers through Facebook. How is your perspective on this too? I mean, you have such a powerful community, it should be very fast, a dominant player.
I'm very excited about this. It really plays to our strengths. We have more small businesses on our platform that are active and engaged than anyone. And that's where the sweet spot of this jobs product is not the big companies, not the jobs where you have a 3-page CV, but all the jobs at small local businesses and jobs, you know, in various communities, not just in the big cities. And it's exciting in many countries. In the US, I think something like half of businesses reported that they either found or hired someone on Facebook even before this product.
Without this, I do it since years without the tool.
Exactly.
Very successful,
And the tool has just been a huge accelerator to that. What we're really excited about is making sure we can scale it and make it work in the whole world.
Yeah.
The interesting thing is the job market is subtly different in every country, in every economy, how people are found, how durable are jobs, how quickly things change. So we're really excited to test it in different markets of different world regions and different development levels to make sure it can really be a tool for everyone. But every market has small businesses that when they do well, they need to hire more people, and finding those people is really, really hard.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Maybe we are now at HR. Maybe we talk a little bit about your speech. I told you before that I really was surprised because I did not expect someone who is talking about his attitude to work, his way of working, how he treats his people. And you talked about agility. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about why are you such a fan of this method. And you had, maybe I can add this, a very nice analogy between the software industry 15 years ago, where they were selling software in boxes, and our industry, the advertising industry right now. I loved it.
Yeah, I mean, at the top level, I think I'm passionate about this topic so much because I really care about making people satisfied in their work and helping everyone use their talent to do the best work possible. I think the world is changing a lot right now, and it'll take good culture in all the companies and a lot of work to make sure that everyone in the world gets to use all their skills and do make the world better with them. Specifically for me, you know, I grew up with Facebook. As we talked about, you know, the ads team grew from really tiny to really big, and it's been a huge passion for me to try to maintain that connection between everyone, that ownership feeling for everyone on the team, that you do own things, you can make decisions. And I want everyone on my team to be growing too, not just doing the same job again and again. Every 6 months, I want everyone on the team to be thinking, wow, I'm a better me than I was 6 months ago. And the good thing is when things are growing, not only can that be aspirational, but it's almost a necessity. If we don't develop our people quickly enough, if we don't help them grow into leaders, we can't achieve our goals. So I have both the passion for it and the necessity.
Yeah. So you.
And the most amazing thing that's happened to me recently is I think on mobile and creative and marketing right now, everyone gets mobile now. That was not the case, I think, 1 or 2 years ago. But now everyone gets it, everyone understands news feeds, everyone understands stories. I'm just really impressed with how sophisticated everyone is. But people are running into a lot of trouble making their big business and their big brand actually work in this new environment at scale. And it's been just fascinating to me how many of the challenges are exactly the same that the software industry has faced in the past, or even I faced trying to maintain the same culture in a team that was tiny and now is a lot bigger.
Interesting. Yeah. You had, when we talked 2 days ago, you talked about your team. So I remember that you have 5 direct reports.
Yeah.
That the managers under this level have one-on-one meetings with you very regular, and mm-hmm. you told us that you don't talk about their bosses with them. You talk about scary things that make them excited. So you really have a relationship not just with your managers but with the layer below.
Yeah,
I love this. It's a good concept.
Yeah, I wrote a blog post called "Awkward One-on-Ones." You can Google Rabkin Awkward, and it's unfortunately the number one result. But it's a big passion of mine that a lot of our meetings at work, we kind of waste them on status updates. We kind of waste them on, hey, what's going on? Like stuff that can be in an email, stuff that can be in a quick update. And especially one-on-one meetings with leaders, one-on-one meetings with your managers, you just don't get that much time for that per week, per month.
Yeah.
And I really want to use it for the most important problems, and the most important problem is like helping people grow, giving them real feedback, discussing the tough stuff that's a little awkward, but very rewarding.
It's not just rewarding. If you're interested, I could give you the data behind. So when we were a couple of years ago, the first time at Google, they told us, an HR person, they said when we look into our data with human resources, and when we give someone more money, there's a 2% chance, higher chance, that he won't leave the company. If we promote him, there's a 3% chance that he won't leave us. If we give him regular exchange with a senior guy, there's a 70% higher that he won't leave the company. That's what you are doing day by day, and that's why your team can grow that fast. It's data.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I don't have the hard survey for this. This is kind of my own anecdotal experience, but we've had over the years a lot of people leave the team because they felt, oh, I'm not getting enough opportunity, I'm not growing fast enough, I need to go somewhere else, mix it up in order to grow at a good speed. I have never had anyone leave because they said, oh, the bosses were pushing me to grow too fast. They were expecting too much from me and really, really giving me a lot of feedback, and they really wanted me to grow and I wasn't ready for it. So I'm trying to make sure with everyone I'm working with to kind of overcorrect to that angle. Because especially in this industry, people want to grow. People are ambitious. People want to do big things.
So yeah, what do you say?
Yeah, very interesting. I mean, the whole topic of agility. I mean, I founded a company and grew it from 2 to 250, which is not comparable to Facebook, but we are facing the same problem. So,
I mean, I think growing your own company that way, it carries with a completely different set of issues. So that's amazing.
Yeah, but what I think what has changed in my aspect, and maybe you can elaborate on this on Facebook level, is that, you know, when organizations grow, then it gets political, and you know, you have a lot of discussions about the quality of the coffee and stuff like that. So how do you handle this at Facebook? I mean, there's a lot of things going on. So just give us a...
They have the best coffee?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a couple thoughts. One is, you know, political on some sense just means having to do with a lot of humans. Whenever there's a lot of humans. I think what people mean when they say politics in the corporate environment is people acting in their own interest and not in the interest of the community or the interest of the company. So there's a lot we do to keep people focused on the mission and community. We're in general a very mission-driven company. What we stand for and what we want to bring people is very clear in the outside world. And we try to make every person, no matter how senior or junior, feel included in that bigger mission. I think if all a person is talking about or thinking about it is their project and their team, their world is small. And that's where these divisions creep in, and that's where politics comes in. But if they are getting information, if they're discussing strategy, if they're hearing updates on a level much bigger than them all the time, then they feel like part of a much greater whole. And everyone turns into this collaborative, we all have to work together to achieve the mission culture, instead of, oh, I'm doing my own thing and I'm going to focus on making that better.
Maybe we switch back to our core business, which is advertising. So Thea and I, we formed a joint venture 2 years ago because we believed that especially Facebook, but social media advertising, it all needs a totally different approach for an agency. So we brought together data people, software people, media people with creatives, and we merged creativity and technology.
Uplift, is that right?
That's right, yeah. Is this the right way? Do you think we're on the right track?
I love it, personally. I think it's clear that when you're trying to figure out a totally new space, you need all types of people to figure it out. the measurement folks have to figure it out, the creatives have to, like, every part of the advertising stack needs to get better at a new format, at a new medium, at a new direction. And my view is they're always going to figure it out better and faster when they're all working together, rather than each layer of the stack separating and trying to figure out completely on their own, because we know how much interaction there is there. So I think for learning, for exploration, that kind of vertical integration is clearly faster and better. I think what we don't know yet, because it hasn't happened yet, is for really scaled businesses, really big brands, over the long term, how much specialization will there still be? How much will they do in-house? How much will they have separate agencies for everything? How much will there be these combined agencies? And I don't know the answer. I do think, regardless of where all these functions sit, in the future, the communication between them and the collaboration between them will be much, much tighter than it is today. But there's a lot of interesting questions, from recruiting and retaining and growing great talent to business models. I think there's a great cliche in that there is only two ways to make money in business: bundling and unbundling. And you have to pick the business, and then you do all of it. I think same thing for, there's only vertical integration and horizontal integration. And we might actually see us go through both phases as businesses adapt to the whole new mobile ecosystem.
Cool. Mark, thank you so much for joining this conference, for giving us the opportunity to do this podcast. We know that you have other topics right now, but we are very happy to have you as a partner. And
thank you so much. Thank you for having me. This was wonderful.
Safe trip home.
Thank you. Buzz.